So I'd like to speak this morning, read and comment on Chenuel's secrets on cultivating the mind, which we recited in our sutra practice, and I'll read in a moment. But first I wanted to comment on the appearance of two characters from our sutra service. One character has appeared in our special dedications. His name is Raleigh Chilton, and apparently there has been some efficacy of our chanting, for Raleigh is now up and about from open heart surgery. So Raleigh, so wonderful to have you. And I hope you don't miss any more of your responsibilities as practice. and then also the always mysterious appearance of Zen Master Bo Mun, whose Dharma name is often confused with his last name. I think it was a joke by his teacher, Bowman Bowman. Anyway, George is one of the founding teachers of this temple and of Boundless Way. A founding teacher means you don't do any of the work, but you get all the credit. and certainly the credit for his lifetime of practice and his... can't say anything good about him without crying. His great kindness to me. So, George, so... But Chenuel says, consider sudden awakening. When people are deluded, they assume that the four great elements are the body and the false thoughts are the mind. They do not know that their own nature is the true Dharma body. They do not know that their own self-illuminating awareness is the true Buddha. They look for the Buddha outside their mind. While they are thus wandering aimlessly, the entrance to the road might by chance be pointed out by a wise advisor. If in one thought they then follow back the light of their mind to its source and see their own original nature, they will discover that the ground of this nature is innately free of defilement, and that they themselves are originally endowed with the non-outflow wisdom nature, which is not a hair's breadth different from that of all the Buddhas. Hence it is called sudden awakening. Consider gradual cultivation. Although people have awakened to the fact that their original nature is no different from that of all the Buddhas, the beginningless habit energies are extremely difficult to remove suddenly, and so they must continue cultivation while relying on this awakening. Through this gradual permeation, their endeavors reach completion. They constantly nurture the sacred embryo, and after a long time, they become a saint. Hence it is called gradual cultivation. Sudden and gradual cultivation are like two wheels of a cart. Neither one can be missing. So our great ancestor Chenuel, a 12th century Korean Zen master, was quite a luminary in the Korean Buddhist tradition. And he appeared at a time when Buddhism in Korea was flourishing. It was embraced by the government and was considered quite a good career choice. That if you wanted to encounter power and have a good life, you could become a monk. A little different from now. But when Chenuel came into this environment, he was quite discouraged. And I was reading a wonderful history of Chenul's life, and it was talking about Korean Buddhism, and it said, commented on the fact that when an institution finds great success, it is often leads to the decline of the institution. So we might have some fantasy about, wouldn't it be wonderful if Zen were practiced by many people and we had a national teacher of Zen and it was recognized. But of course, when something gets bigger, it gets more complicated, and so hard in our enterprise to keep remembering what is most important. And as we continue in our own practice, and as this temple and our boundless way perhaps grows in the future, let us always be dedicated to practice. The point of what we are doing is not about growing a large institution. Institutions will grow and flourish and then will pass away, and just like we do. But Chenul, when he encountered the great success and the great power of Buddhism and Zen and Son in his time, he was quite determined to turn away from that and decided that he would base his life on practice, and got together with a small band of other monks who were interested in this, and actually dropped out of the establishment. And he created what he called the Samadhi Prajna school. Samadhi meaning that quality of practice which is absorption, and prajna, the wisdom or the cutting through. And Chenul was a great synthesizer, great person of saying that though there appear to be many ways, there is just one way. And in our Zen tradition, we sometimes talk about Rinzai and Soto. Rinzai, known for the awakening, must have awakening, only go straight, realize your true nature and everything is fine. Soto much more emphasizing already here. What's all the fuss? Why make any effort? Doesn't any effort we make lead us away from what is our birthright? And so easy to come down on one side or the other. To create a solid position and look over at the other side and with a slight smirk, oh, those poor people that think you have to try hard, or those poor people that don't know what awakening is. Of course, in our practice, we need both elements. If we stay in the position of oneness, we miss the vivid possibility of the particular. If we get lost in the particular and in the necessity of great effort, we miss what has already been so freely given. So I think this passage where he's talking about sudden awakening versus gradual cultivation, again, looking at these two aspects of practice. And traditionally, or from the ordinary mind, we might think, well, of course, it's gradual cultivation and then sudden awakening, that we practice the violin and practice and practice, and then we can make music. But Chenul actually said that he thought that it went the other way around, that we don't practice in order to achieve some kind of awakening, although many of us do practice to attain some kind of awakening. And we've been talking this week about how much suffering our ideas of awakening bring, and what a barrier it can be when we think we know what we're doing, think we know where we're going. But Chanul remarked that there is some kind of sudden awakening that must happen before we can do this work of gradual cultivation. That all of us here in this room, we say over and over, all of us already have had some taste. Otherwise we would not be here. Some moment of opening, or maybe many moments, maybe large, maybe small. But these moments of awakening are true and change the course of our life. And then the necessity after this, some kind of seeing to do this work, this endless work of gradual cultivation, breath by breath. So in the sudden awakening, it says, consider sudden awakening. When people are deluded, they assume that the four great elements are the body and the false thoughts are the mind, that they do not know that their own nature is the true Dharma body. They do not know that their own self-illuminating awareness is the true Buddha. I was really caught by this self, their own self-illuminating awareness. We are looking for our life. We are looking for some true way, looking for a way to live with sincerity and freedom. And we are encouraged again and again not to look somewhere else. And the other places we look are, first of all, to our ideas. We hear some words and we form an image. Oh, this must be. Or we see someone else and we think, oh, if I could only be like them. But this awakened nature, this true freedom, this Buddha nature is already here, this self-illuminating awareness. So the mind creates thoughts, sensations arise. And we often confuse the contents of our mind, what Chanul calls these false thoughts. We chase them. We think that there is some way to reach where we're going through the mind. But who is it that is thinking these thoughts? Who is it who is aware of being here? So I hear the faint hum of our blessed heating system. And listening to this sound, at first, my first thought is, well, that sound is in the pipes, in the radiator, the sound of water moving. But if we look closely into the nature of what is arising in this moment, we can begin to wonder, who is it that is hearing this sound? who is sitting here? Is that sound on the outside or the inside? There is an effortless functioning of life. Life is living itself while we have all of our various opinions. Melissa mentioned the wonderful Native American poem that I first encountered in my early 20s, and it was one of those teachings that you come across that stay with you. It's stayed with me now these many years. And it is, goes, why do I go about pitying myself when all the time I am being carried on great winds across the sky? Why do I get lost in a small mind? Why do I get lost in the concerns when all the time there is some great life force that I have never been separate from? You came into the world not of your own accord. And while you may decide whether to take one scoop or two scoops of the delicious stewed fruit, you are not in control of very much else. We put the food in our mouth and move our teeth up and down and swallow. And we hope for the best. Of course, sometimes good, sometimes not so good, but on the whole, all of us find a way to digest our food. If you were in charge of digesting your food, you would be dead quite quickly. Such a complicated matter, such an intricate dance that goes on, this intricate dance of our life, that is so close to us, is nothing but our life, and so often we miss it because we're busy looking somewhere else. So this wonderful retreat is the opportunity to begin to start looking where we are. Chinul called this following back the light of your mind. Right? Rather than pursuing things outside, this turn around, this pivot, where we cease to look outside and we come into this moment. While there is some intention in this activity, we do have to decide, I will go sit on my cushion, on my chair, for one more session. So there must be some intention, but we cannot direct this activity with our mind. Any direction we choose to go, other than here, is just chasing another delusion. I think of the wonderful wisdom of the Judeo-Christian tradition, that wonderful verse where God says, we might say life says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that what you long for has already been given you. I was speaking with Diane, our Tanto, yesterday, and she is doing grandmother duty, alternating 3 days a week, helping out her son and daughter-in-law, and so spending her day with, I believe her grandson is 4 months or 5 months old now. And yesterday she was saying it, she said, it may just be because I'm the grandmother, but he seems so loving, such a loving being. And when I asked her to explain a little, she said, well, there's some times of the day that he just wants to be held and loved. And so I hold him and love him. And I think of this infant's great capacity to receive love. No need on his part, no possibility at this point of putting together a self or of keeping score. Oh, if I let you love me, then I have to do this. And so beyond that, such pure innocence of human heart to human heart, and infant calls and grandmother responds. And all are blessed, all are blessed. We are called, we are challenged to receive what is here, to receive this life that we can never be separate from. No matter what realm of contraction and darkness you travel to, the Bodhisattva is there. And if you look for the Bodhisattva somewhere else, but Bodhisattva is looking for Bodhisattva. Man with flashlight in a dark room is searching all the corners looking for the flashlight. Where could it be? Where could this vast treasure be? Kabir has a wonderful poem where he says, don't look for me in stupas and in ritual practices. Don't look for me in esoteric disciplines. He says, God says, I am the breath within the breath. So to, in order to perceive this, there is a melting down. There are glimpses we have, but there is this constant melting down and melting down. And I, as I was saying the other day, quoting Uchiyama, we say Zen is participating in loss. We think there is something to gain, and we hope to gain it. But there is this place where fundamentally there is nothing that can be gained. We are encouraged to participate. We are invited, and the world waits utterly patiently, utterly present, supporting us at every moment. And there is this possibility of turning. There is the possibility of letting things be, of receiving what is here. This ground of our nature. this ground of our being. Encouraging us all prajna energy that we might walk forward step after step. Katagiri Roshi said once, let us all practice for 10,000 kalpas joyfully. There is no end to our practice. To participate joyfully, moving into whatever is here, being opened up, being broken down, being reborn. Again and again, the great possibility of human life and the great joy for me, no greater joy than doing this with good friends, old friends, new friends. Not an easy road, but the road of freedom. And the road of possibility already realized. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Time for questions, complaints, observations.
Recently with institutions that had so much promise and then in that success. So I've seen it recently in a professional group I was part of, and it became the status quo, which is our dream. And I remember quoting Margaret Mead when we started, never doubt a few committed people can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that hasn't seen a pipe dream. And it became the status quo, and I just got a call from someone who inside said, you know, it's coming down, they're taking it down. The former spiritual group I was part of, I saw the same thing. And myself, when I said I'll never get caught in golden handcuffs, and I needed a huge wake-up call to get out of that.
Yeah.
And so, what is that? And I want to believe it wouldn't happen to Buddhism or the spiritual group I was part of, but it did, and I watch it. And to me, when I was so committed not to be in the golden handcuffs, how do we keep the spirit in the heart of life?
Yeah.
The life.
Yeah.
And I feel it here.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the true way. It will never happen. I think it's cause for great humility, right? If any of us think we're different, right? You know, it's so easy to say, well, look at those people. You know, my goodness, thank goodness we're not. Well, we are like those people, and I think that has to be the place we start. We are no different. And there is, I think the only thing more difficult than failure is success. Right? Because we so crave some solidity, and we are seduced again and again. And so I think this work of going back to the source, you know, so when you say this great desire to stay close to the thing itself, I think that when I read Chenul, that's one of the things that inspired me. He said, let us practice, right? Let's keep coming back to this. And what will happen is this place will flourish and it will fall apart. It will. So, right now, let's practice. Right? What else can we do? And follow what's happening. And if wonderful, more people come, we build a big whatever. But let's always keep our heart in the practice, and not think that we're different. Continue to practice with our great hearts.
Thank you.